FNR, Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego and Luis Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, live across Australia. Welcome to FNR Football Nation Radio. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego, and this is Football Extra. And we're still celebrating the great win by the Socceroos over Honduras. Gets us to the fourth World Cup in a row since 2006 in Russia to 2018. Great performance by the Socceroos. 3-1 winners last night. Mile Jedinak, Captain Courageous, got the three goals last night. One a deflected free kick and the other two penalties. It doesn't matter how they come about, but they got the win, and the boys are celebrating now before they go back to their clubs. But joining us on Football Extra today, as he does every Thursday, is Australian football legend Alan Davidson. How are you, Davo?
Good morning, Carlos. How are you?
It's great to be here, and it's amazing. You know, you haven't played for the Socceroos for, what, 20 years?
A bit longer than that,
but you've got the smile on the face. There's glow through your body. You obviously, even to this day, when you see an Australian side qualifying for a World Cup, and you've had a side with your son involved, you know, Jason, it must mean so much to you as a former Socceroo that they make it again.
I think just from the football component in the country, the Socceroos are the flagship. So, you know, it's so important. It's so important for football that the Socceroos do well, they go to the World Cup, that they get that international exposure, because it just opens up all the doors for the code in the country as well.
Do you... Not that this Socceroo team ever diminishes the value of the shirt, ever. I think through the whole campaign, there's not one player who hasn't given their all for the shirt. Yes, they make mistakes and whatever, but there's no one who really disparages the shirt at all. When you watch a person, especially since you've finished playing, wear that green and gold, and you don't feel they're either putting in or their attitude's not right or they're disrespecting your shirt, do you feel a little bit... you know, a little bit angry or bitter about that when you see that?
I think I would, but I don't think that's the case with any of the Socceroos.
No.
I think once the Socceroos put that jersey on, and I think once you've played for your country, it makes you become a proud Australian as well, and it makes you... it just brings importance to what you are and what you're about. And playing for the Socceroos is a good was a great avenue for me to understand how lucky we are in Australia and what it means to be Australian.
Do you, when you watch games, I know you watch all the Socceroo games, do you, for example, at the National Anthem, do you reflect on you standing there at the National Anthem when you were playing, or when you know the left fullback or the right fullback, depending on where you were playing at the time, had done or made a decision or done something on the field? Do you sort of put yourself in that situation and remind yourself maybe of times when you played in that position or were in that situation against certain teams?
Not really.
Because I would.
Yeah,
I'd be playing it through my mind all the
not
time.
Not really. For me, you know, obviously a national anthem is always an important part, especially when you're on the park and you're out there lined up with all the players and you're listening to your national anthem before the game. But, you know, the emotions are, you know, they're proud moments. But when you're watching it on TV, it's still a proud moment, but you just want the team to do well and you want the result, basically.
Yeah.
You're a spectator now, so you can enjoy the game without the pressure.
When you're standing there at the National Anthem, and I know, I think everyone who's ever known and listened to me on radio knows the admiration I've had for the Mad Dogs. You know, for me, that was a springboard to everything we've had since. What you guys did in the 80s under Frank Arak, you didn't get to World Cups, but you got to Olympics and you beat Yugoslavia there, and there were some other moments along the way where you made us proud, but you didn't get to a World Cup. But tell us what it was like standing, and I'll go back to 85, you know, at Olympic Park, Scotland there, it was a beautiful, beautiful night, 35,000 people at Olympic Park. I think the ground probably held 20,000, but there was 35, we were packed in like sardines. And we didn't, I believe that something could happen, but generally the public, you were 2-0 down from the first leg, and they were coming back to Melbourne to play you guys, and there was a national anthem. And I don't think I've ever heard the national anthem sung so loud by such a big cohort of crowd that day. Did you get the sense that day that something special may have happened? Because you played unbelievably well. And on another night when Jim Leighton didn't play so well, you may have been going to a World Cup in Mexico at the time.
Yeah, I guess it's... everyone's dream to go to the World Cup, and we were still in the race, and the atmosphere on the night was electrifying. There was, you know, I've never been in such an atmosphere where we've been the home team, and the crowd was so supportive and loud. The only thing was that, and we were all pumped up, we were focused, and we really believed we could get a result. The only thing is that we should have and could have, but didn't.
Yeah.
But we had our chances, you know. Cozzy had, you know, a great opportunity, and you know, I remember, you know, Jarkov coming on, and he had a great opportunity one-on-one with the keeper. And
Jimmy Patikas too.
Jimmy Patikas as well, you know. So we had three great opportunities, you know, in the box, one-on-one with the keeper. All we had to do was put it away, and we'd be going to the World Cup, but we didn't. Leighton was the best player on the ground, and that's probably a measurement of what we achieved as a team, but it was just that final you know, shot at goal that didn't go in, and Leighton, good luck to him, but Scotland went through. Yeah, after the game, you know, it was interesting. We talk about that because it was interesting. We did lose, but the standing ovation, I remember the standing ovation after the game.
Mm.
And that was special to us, and it was touching too, because we didn't qualify, but the crowd really appreciated, I think, the effort we put in, the opportunity, and we really, you know, we did ourselves proud, and that was a great feeling to get that admiration. Sometimes, you know, we've walked off the ground and we've been booed off, and we didn't get results and whatever. But that the one thing I do remember of that game, apart from the crowd and the night, was after the game and the admiration that the crowd showed to the Socceroos.
How long did it take you to get over that? I mean, was it a scar there? Did you feel that you let people down? I mean, what was the overwhelming feeling at the end of it? Obviously, there was an appreciation from the crowd, but you deep down as a winner and the rest of that team, because that was a team of winners. You know, and you've mentioned often talking about them being what Frank Arrow calls bastards, right? Team of winners, they're bastards. They only want to win. And even if it was against Scotland with Kenny Dalglish and all the great players they had, you want to win, you expect to win. And being in Melbourne, big crowd, everyone's eyes were upon the Socceroos at that time. You knew the expectation. You thought you could do it. And in the end, it didn't happen.
Probably like the knife in the heart.
Mm.
You know, you know the campaign. You spend so long with the campaign, and to get to the, it's a lot different with the going through the Asian stages now, because a lot of the players are all together, you know, playing regularly because they play a lot more games. Like in those days, we didn't play as many games. The only games that we'd play were world tours, and then we go on a world tour, and then we start our Oceania conference, and then play either in South America or in Europe.
Mm.
So we didn't play as many as games together, but yeah, it's still the campaign. It's a four-year campaign, the goal. And, you know, I was in three campaigns, and we, you know, we were close in some, but at the end of the hurdle, we didn't get there, and that's the reality. And, you know,
which one scarred you the most, and it was harder to get over?
All of them.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I retired. You know, I remember Eddie Thompson wanted me to come back and do my fourth campaign, and I'd had enough, you know what I mean, of, I guess it was a failure, you know, of not going to and qualifying for a World Cup, and the pain and the anguish and the, you know, the sacrifice and commitment. You know, there's a huge commitment, especially, you know, we still weren't professional, at some of us, at those times, you know, and everyone had jobs, and, you know, it was a tough time, and it was, and I thought, nah. And Frank talked me out of the last campaign, of the third one. Frank talked me out of retirement after the Olympic Games, because he asked us. I remember Frank, we were in Seoul, and we played our tournament, and he said, okay, which players are, you know, thinking of staying with the squad, and who's going to retire? And I remember a couple of, you know, Robbie Dunn stuck his hand up, and a few others said, that's it, I'm finished. And I said, yeah, I'm finished too. And then afterwards, he just pulled me aside and he said, no, you're not finished. You've got to play another campaign. So, yeah. So, yeah. And then after that one, we didn't qualify. And, and then I thought, that's it. I'm done. And then I went over to Malaysia and played over there.
Mm. Tell us about your thoughts of this current team. You're pretty close to it in a way, because Jason played so many games. The previous World Cup in 2014, of course, Asian Cup in 2015. I mean, there's a bond with those players. There's a bond with those families. I know you travel with the families, and, yeah, and that's including Ange Postecoglou's family. So there's a bond, yes, there. You know each other really well. You you win and you lose together, almost.
Yes, absolutely. So, everything's together.
So tell us about how you think the boys have fared during this qualification, and also the issues around Ange.
Ah, okay. Okay, the first thing with the issues around Ange, you know, like I think for me, taking the job, the national team job, you're always under scrutiny. Ange has taken a lot of crap, and he's been under the spotlight, and he's been under pressure different ways, formations, you know, some of the results in the, and, you know, and not qualifying, but at the end of the, not qualifying through Asia, and at the end of the day, he's qualified. Mm. So his mandate was to get the Socceroos to the World Cup. He's done the job, and I'm happy that he's, you know, I'm over the moon that the Socceroos have qualified, and for Ange, I'm happy that he's qualified, because he's the one who gave Jason a chance as well. So I'm always loyal to that and thankful for that, and I'm glad that he's got the job done, and you know, hopefully he'll stay on board and go through with the team. You know, there's been a bit of speculation about what's happening, you know, but things like that. I just hope that the group stays together, because there's been through some tough times during the Asian Cup, Asian campaign. But he's done the job. You know, I remember, you know, federations back in my day and later on afterwards, guys like Terry Venables, you know, not qualifying. You know, Rudi Gundorf was, you know, a German coach, came over, didn't qualify for us, you know. So Ange has done the job.
Mm.
At the end of the day, he's done the job. Every coach with a World Cup mandate, is their job is to get him to the World Cup. So no matter what anyone says out there, he's achieved his targets, and thank God for that, and thank God for, you know, the result as well.
Dave, before we go into the second part of the question and talk about the actual team and how they're playing and how you might see them play in Russia in 2018, I want you to have a listen to this grab from Ange Postecoglou's press conference last night, and give us your thoughts on it.
Oh, mate, you know what? If people still think that I go around worrying about what other people are saying, trying to get some vindication, they're just, they've missed the last 20 years. I've been coaching for 20 years, mate. I won my first championship when I was 31 years old. And you know what? I can coach for another 20 years and I'll always be an outsider in Australian football. I don't have the glittering Socceroo career that you need. But that's fine. I wear that as a badge of honour, as I keep saying to people. The more that comes my way, the more determined and resilient I am to just keep going down my own path. It's worked well for me. Some people don't like it. But to be fair, I've had a hell of a lot of support from players, coaches, just the general sporting public. There's not a day goes by where maybe I just see the nice ones, but people are consistently giving me encouragement, and that's all I need. The people who don't get me have never got me and will never get me.
Dave, that's Ange Postecoglou with thanks to Fox Sports last night. A grab from the press conference, which I think was, you know, like the impact of those statements just makes you think that there's where the core of the angst that he must be feeling comes from. This idea that he's an outsider, this idea that he never played didn't have a significant career as a Socceroo, very well respected as the captain of South Melbourne and NSL, but this idea that maybe former Socceroos who had celebrated careers as Socceroos are commenting about him, and obviously him not liking what they're saying.
Yeah, I'm surprised listening to that. I thought, you know, Terry Venables never played for Australia either. So, you know, what's it? I think, you know, Ange has done well on the local scene here with the clubs. And, you know, Ange has been a successful coach. So, you know, he's been given the chance to coach the Socceroos. Some people might like it, some people might not like it. But at the end of the day, you know, he's achieved the target, and it's black and white. So if they're criticising him, I thought, you know, even with my, you know, with my son during the campaign in Brazil, I thought the Socceroos did well. And I remind people that Ange is the only one who's won a trophy for Australia. You know what I mean? A major trophy that's, you know, the Asian Cup's not an easy cup to win. And up until that, his mandate was, and when he took over the Socceroos, he took over the Socceroos very, very late in the campaign for the World Cup. So his mandate at the time, and he mentioned it at the time, that his focus was to win the Asian Cup. So we're using the World Cup as a stepping stone to move towards the target. So he's achieved his target, which was winning the Asian Cup. Then he was given another contract, I think, you know, and then the campaign was to get to the World Cup. He's achieved his target there. So, you know, being a Socceroo or being an ex-Socceroo or not playing many games, I think that's irrelevant. Or his profile, if people are knocking his profile because he's not a high-profile Socceroo, that's irrelevant as well. At the end of the day, you know, he's achieving his targets. You know, Jose Mourinho, I want to know how many games did he play for Portugal? Do you know what I mean? Did he play football at all? If we're going to ask the question.
He was a PE teacher that played second division in Portugal or something like that.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. So if Jose Mourinho can go where he is.
Arsene Wenger's the same. Didn't play at a high level either.
Yeah, so what's the relevance of, you know, for me, the relevance is the target and the mandate. If they achieve it, now no matter which way you go, and Ange, if we didn't qualify, well, that's it, he didn't qualify. But he's qualified, like it or not, you know, to the people that are out there who are probably, you know, is there agendas? You know, what I can't understand, you know, for me it's black and white, you know. Sometimes people might not like the what coaches decide to do or how they do it. That's part and parcel of being the coach and taking the pressure. But the reality of it all is, and for me as a football lover, the most important thing is the Socceroos qualify for the World Cup, because the impact it has on the game in our country is huge. And it flows from, you know, the Socceroos, international players, you know, Russia, World Cup, all the way down to our little grassroots kids of the future and their stars they're looking for and looking at. So it has a huge impact, the Socceroos, and Ange has done the job. I congratulate Ange and the team for a great, tough road. There was hurdles and hiccups and bumps on the way, but at the end of the day, we've qualified. Now, you know, now people will take a back seat maybe, or, you know, the knives will be sharpening up for the next campaign or next, you know. It's part and parcel of the game, but the reality is Ange was employed to get us to the World Cup, and he's achieved that, and we've had a far more, you know, Terry Venables was a huge name in England at the time, and an England manager and blah, blah, blah. He couldn't get us to the World Cup. So let's put it in perspective.
That grab seemed to imply that Ange has had a problem with former Socceroos who are commenting or criticising or whatever it may be. By the way, some of the criticism has been personal. And Mark Bosnich is a guy I respect hugely in this game, who suggested Ange was using the national team to test out, and it's almost like a scientific lab to test out his new formations in the middle of a World Cup campaign. And I understand, by the way, Mark Bosnich questioning the motives of people sometimes, because he was a former Socceroo. How he does that and whether he's right or wrong, you know, I thought he was wrong there completely, but I understand the passion behind that, because everyone has, especially if you played for the Socceroos, the passion behind what that shirt means and what it stands for. But should that be getting to Ange Postecoglou? As he said, he won his first league title at 31. This guy's had a long and successful career. He's usually a winning coach wherever he goes. He had that moment with Craig Foster many years ago on SBS. I would think, you know, that's something that would have hardened him up, but hardened him up to any criticism too. So should, if the reason is because former Socceroos are criticising him, albeit unfairly at times, should that be enough for him to say, I don't want to take this team to Russia? Surely, you know, his life goal, other than having kids and getting married and all that sort of stuff in the personal sense, but in a football sense, surely to take his style of football to Russia next year, as he promised when he first took over, the proactive brand, the pressing brand that's going to win games in World Cups, surely he wants to finish the job and not let comments by so-called commentators out there put him off his target. I just don't get it, Davo.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't. It's a hard one because, you know, obviously he's human. You know, when your name's been banded around and on TV and all over the country and whatever, and it's been negative, it's not a good thing that you want to see, you know. So, you know, I think Ange being in the business for so long as a coach understands what the territory is and the road at you know, sometimes it's a rocky road, or sometimes, you know, you're going to take criticism. But I think that Ange has always come out with results. So but it's only until the result, and then it's guys like Mark Bosnich and, you know, some of the other people you're talking about.
Robbie Slater's been critical too.
Yeah. So some of these ex-Socceroos, you know, maybe, you know, now they'll, you know, I remember after the World Cup, you know, I remember the same people criticising Ange, but at the same time when Ange had succeeded, they turn out and paid him the due credit, what was deserved.
Which I believe they did last night too. I wasn't watching because we were on air at the time, but I believe that there was a lot of positive praise for what Ange has done. So
there has to be, because he's achieved his target.
Absolutely. So, Davo, why would Ange let this get to him if that's the reason why he may walk away from this job?
Well, only Ange can answer that. But in saying that, at this stage, for me, you know, has he walked away from the job?
No, he hasn't. But he hasn't categorically said he's staying. So there's doubt over it. There's uncertainty over it. In fact, when he was asked in the press conference last night, he said, "I'll have to sit down with my family, my wife, my close friends, and talk about it over the next couple of days." Now, I believe that probably the decision's already made, but he probably wants to clear his head a little bit more and have a second or third think about it. But there's some uncertainty. So I think the question we're asking, or this conversation we're having, is a relevant conversation because it's still out there. He could have come out last night and said, "I'm definitely staying."
I can't answer that either. I don't know. Like, all that sort of stuff, I don't know. I just think that, you know, the most important thing is we're qualified. For me, the most important thing, first and foremost, is we've qualified. The Socceroos are qualified. If Ange decides to step down for personal reasons, or, you know, we don't even know what the reasons are, or if he's frustrated with certain things, well, that's his prerogative. He's achieved his target. He's been employed to get the Socceroos to the World Cup, and he's done it. Yep. So, you know, after that, you know, I don't know.
Well, let's take a break, and after that we'll get off that subject and we'll talk about the team and what they're looking like at the moment.
Let's be positive. You're dampening my day.
Well, that's FNR. We've got 24 hours to talk football, so we're going to talk about every aspect of it. So when we get back, I want to talk about the actual team, what you think about it, the style of play, and what a new coach might do if Ange is not there. I think it's important to talk about the next coach, if it's going to be an Australian coach or it's going to be a foreign coach, if Ange moves on. So, of course, we're speculating again, because Ange could well be the coach, but I think the situation we're in calls for a conversation like this. This is Football Extra with the legend of Australian football, Alan Davidson, with me, Carlos Alberto Diego. This is FNR, Football Nation Radio.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego and Luis Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Live across Australia, this is FNR Football Nation Radio. It is Football Extra, and we have in the studio the legend, or one of the legends of Australian football, Alan Davidson. Of course, you can join the conversation anytime. 9944 9999 9999 9999 03 in front of that if you're outside Victoria, and also +613 if you're overseas. You can SMS us anytime with your thoughts and comments. 0428 9333 45 0428 9333 45. Now, Davo, before the break, we spoke about Ange and his future, and look, no one's got answers, but, you know, it's worth having a chat about.
Well, let's hope that Ange doesn't resign, and let's hope he stays on board and takes the team to the World Cup, because, you know, he deserves to go to the World Cup, and he's done the job, and, you know, I think with what he's done and achieved, you know, hopefully, if, like I was listening earlier to Maddie, that we get a bit of luck with the draw, and who knows?
We never. It's always a group of death, Davo. Every time. There's no teams that we will get that won't put us in the group of death,
Carlos.
And we like it that way too, Davo.
Be positive.
Now, just on the point about Ange taking us to the World Cup. What I'm really, really curious, I mean, I'm a Ange Postecoglou fan in that what he's done and what he's trying to do for Australian football, in that an Australian coach, an Australian team can go to a World Cup and win games by playing proactive football. That's what I love about what he's tried to do. And it's never really happened before. It's always us going there, being battlers. It's always been, you know, let's go and, you know, if we can sneak a goal, you know, it's that sort of approach all the time. But what Ange is trying to do is go there and actually go head to head with big teams around the world, but playing a brand of football or winners games by not being pressed back or parking the bus. And I am really curious about what that will look like overseas. Now, in Russia. Now, we obviously, this has been tinkered with and, you know, it's not looked good at times and we've looked a bit shaky. But these two games against Honduras, we've seen a little bit more. And again, people might say, oh, well, who are Honduras? They're not a great side. But we're seeing how effective a back three, a packed midfield, and how that works in the system that Ange is talking about with the wing-backs pushing on. That proactive style of play, there's still a lot of work to do, and there's probably personnel will have to be coming in to actually even make it better. But is that the way you're confident that we can go there and do some damage at a World Cup?
Well, you know, firstly, Matty mentioned the last World Cup, and I think Ange did a reasonable job considering how long he was in the job and how many new players he brought in and all that sort of stuff. Regardless, his attacking philosophy, and people were saying we shouldn't be doing that then. So I think he's been to a World Cup already, and I've been firsthand and had the opportunity to see how, you know, his philosophy and what he's imparting with the team and how he wants to play. And I didn't think that the young team in that last World Cup had did so bad either. And then followed on with the Asian Cup, when everyone knocked him for the Asian Cup, and we did, you know, we started off sort of up and down, and we dropped the game to Korea. And then, you know, everyone was bagging him and on the, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of the day, it transpired. Now Ange is playing with formation, you know, and, you know, with the wing backs have always got forward. You know what I mean? Even back in the previous World Cup, the wing backs were getting forward. That was part of his attacking philosophy as well. So, you know, playing with a back three or back four, the attacking side of the game hasn't changed. And, you know, it's been successful in some games. It hasn't been successful in other games, you know, and that's part and parcel of football. But at the end of the day, it's the end result that is important to me. And, you know, I'm sure that Ange and his staff would monitor and look at different things, what they might have to tweak in each game as they progress, or is he the right player or whatever. So there are certain things that will evolve as we're going. And, you know, and also they've had suspensions, you know, injuries and all these other things that come into it, which sort of, you know, contribute to the team being changed and whatever. So, you know, at the end result, we should all be happy that Strokeroos won and, you know, we're going to the World Cup.
Well, we saw by way of evidence over the last two games that how much, even though a lot of people out there probably don't appreciate him as much as Ange Postecoglou and his own teammates do, but Mille Jedinak. Now, you see him on the ground sometimes. He turns over the ball. He miscontrols things at different times. But he is such an important part of that team. And we've seen it when he was out halfway through the campaign, where he just couldn't. Apparently, he'd played injured before that, and suddenly he couldn't play anymore. Wasn't playing for his club. Wasn't playing for Australia. I think that was almost the time where we started dipping and being a bit more uncertain about how to go about it. So it seems like this formation of play is not really the formation that's the issue, it's actually personnel. By having Mille Jedinak in that middle of the park, being that protector of the back three, plus also supporting the guys who are pushing forward like Moy and Rogic and even Bates to a certain point, Luongo, these sort of players, it just seems like we just missed that type of player while he was out. And I think we've seen the value of Mille Jedinak in these last two games. What are your thoughts about that? And also, is there a player that you played with, even though it's a completely different team, I know, but were players, any player that you played with in the national team that had that same presence? And when he was there, it gave more, it gave a lot of people around him that confidence. And when he wasn't there, there was that little bit of uncertainty. Even though I'm looking back at your teams, I think you probably had a lot more spread of that sort of person around the ground.
You know, for me, firstly, Millet's been, I thought he was outstanding. Outstanding in the game with Honduras. They, apart from the three goals, you know, that's, you know, one thing. But just him, his ball winning. He's, you know, Millet's in the team, not for his, for me, Millet's not in the team for his passing ability. I think Moy's more in that role. But, you know, Milligan and Millet, you know, for me, both of them are such great defensive midfielders. And Millet, for me, he's like a wall. It's like the Great Wall of China across the middle there, you know. And the amount of times he wins ball in the air and wins tackles in on the ground in those, in, you know, just in that sort of coming into the front third, it's crucial. And, you know, I thought he was outstanding last night, and, you know, the three goals that scored by him, you know, yes, I think the most important, it was interesting though, all goals were from set pieces. And, you know, we talk about play and all this and, you know, trying to break teams down or whatever, but at the end of the day, you know, the discipline of the team, and, you know, I thought the Honduras discipline in the back third was terrible, you know, giving so many free kicks away. It was just a matter of time, and sure enough, you know, we've exploited it and we got the opportunity to, and, you know, all four goals from both teams, all four goals came from set pieces. So, but for me, the team, with Millet, it's not the same team. He's a, apart from his a performance on the field, it's the leadership qualities that Millet has and how he leads the team and what people look up to. You know, even when Jason and the younger boys, you know, were in the team, they look up to these guys and they're leaders and they're mentors. And I think, you know, I mentioned Timmy Cahill and Bresciano and Millet. These guys are all great mentors for the younger players.
But do we
well.
Have enough of that? Because I shouldn't have actually equated it to your time, because it seemed like all of you were that sort of tough leader. There's a lot of them in your team at that time. Maybe was when Timmy's not playing on the field and Millie's not available, do they have enough of those type of mentor type guys that, you know, that you just wouldn't question on the field with their attitude, their effort, their leadership qualities, and they always bring other people around them. I don't think there's an accident that Mas Luongo played his best game in the first leg against Honduras since the Asian Cup. I don't think Mas has been at his best for the Socceroos until I saw what he did in Honduras. I thought he was back to his best. Guess who's next to him? Mili Jednak. Bajic is another one who I thought has been in and out, a little bit flaky with the Socceroos, not always great, has moments, but I thought he was fantastic in Honduras. And again, he was very, very good the other night too. Again, Mili Jednak is plonked in the middle of the field, gives these guys a little bit more confidence. Do we have enough of those guys though?
I think it's, the other thing is too, it's a part, you know, part of people's characters as well. You know, I look at the Socceroos and all bunch of nice guys. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when I look at the Socceroos in our time, like, you can get much, people just would eyeing you up. You know what I mean? They wouldn't say much, you know? So, you know, in terms of leadership, you know, I think that
there's not enough bastards. Is that what you're saying?
No. I think that it's not about being bastards. I think the team, a lot of these players, you know, are still evolving as well as players. You know what I mean? And, you know, they've got their leaderships in their own way, you know, where, yeah, when you pick a team that's, you know, the criteria is you've got to be a bastard as well. You know, like, that's what you get, you know, so.
Yeah. I'm just really interested. I think the fact that Ange Postecoglou risked Tim Cahill after the ankle injury, put him on a flight, okay, well, be it 24 hours after he should have left, and they had all the, you know, medical people around him, all, you know, his own personal physio and all that sort of stuff. That's still a risk to fly him over if you weren't going to play him. And there was every chance that he wasn't going to play in Honduras. For me, that was a statement saying, I need Timmy here for his mentor ability, for his leadership off the ground, because I need to make sure these guys are thinking positively when I'm not with them.
Well, he's got the experience, hasn't he? You know, look at his experience and look at how many other players have got his experience or played at the level he's played at for as long as he's played at. You know, you know, Millet's, you know, Milligan's a good leader as well. I think that he's a good role modeler and mentor now, and he's taken on that role. Do you know what I mean? But guys like sort of Aaron Moy, who's flying at the moment, you know, he's a quiet person. You don't hear boo out of him. You know what I mean? So, and that doesn't mean that he's not a leader. He leads. No. He leads by example. He doesn't lead with his mouth and lead by, you know, but he does it by example, and he does his talking on the field, and he's quiet. So it comes back to personalities and characters as well, you know. So I'm just trying to think, you know, I think Trent Sainsbury can step up into that leadership role, you know. You know, he's another one that I think I thought he did really well last night as well, defensively as well, you know what I mean. Bailey Wright, not too sure. He's a bit quiet he's a quiet person as well, you know, a joker and that, but I don't know. There's guys still evolving, and I think, you know, the more games they play together, the more, you know, the more experiences, the more hurdles and the more ups and downs they have to go through together as well. You start to see, you know, the bond growing, and, you know, you start seeing other people maybe driving it as well from, you know, you know, people you don't really expect. You know, guys like Cruzy, he's a quiet sort of guy, joker,
Lecky family really well.
Matthew's a quiet guy as well. He doesn't say boo as well. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's, you know, one of the players I'm a real big fan of is Tommy Rogic. You know what I mean? He seems to be like a quiet guy as well. You know what I mean? Like, they're quiet personalities, that doesn't mean they're not players that they aren't winners and they aren't going to do the job. It's just their personality.
It's that blend of characters in the team, and maybe that's been recognised, and maybe people aren't seeing enough of that because it's not the formation. Maybe it's who was available, and Timmy being Timmy at 38, you're not going to play him every minute of every game, but you want him in the squad. Amile being injured, no wonder the FFA, from all reports, sent Les Gallus, the physio, to England to live with Miller for 3 or 4 weeks beforehand to get him right for these games and spend all the money to do that because they recognise how important he was.
Absolutely.
Dave, let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about the next stage for these guys. A lot of them aren't playing regularly. A lot of them are probably playing in leagues that aren't going to necessarily make Ange or whoever the coach is pick them. You know, they're probably going to knock the door down to be in the Socceroos squad to go to Russia in 2008. I just want to know what your thoughts about, you know, their decision-making about where they are now and where they should go to in the January transfer window, or what they should be looking at to make sure that they are in a position to be picked for Russia 2018. This is Football Extra with the legendary Alan Davidson in the studio. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego. More after the break here on FNR Football Nation Radio.
FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego and Luis Taffer on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Live across Australia on this fantastic day after the Australians defeated the Hondurans last night in the World Cup qualifying playoff to get Australia to the 2018 World Cup. This is Football Extra on FNR Football Nation Radio. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego. In the studio with me is the great Alan Davidson. We're talking about where to now, Davo, for this squad. Of course, they're all going back to their clubs, and they've got to think about club land to make sure that they're playing well so they can be considered for the Socceroos. But some of them aren't playing regularly. Some of them have had a stop and start time at their clubs. It doesn't bode well if they're, you know, wanted to be at their best for Russia 2018. And people think, oh, well, it's 7 months away. It's plenty of time. But not really. I think they've got the January transfer window, depending where they are around the world. And then they've got really the rest of that season. And then they've got to prepare for the World Cup. So there's not a lot of times. Yeah. So how important is it for now all these players to take stock of where they are and maybe think a little bit the reverse, in that instead of thinking I play well for my club, I'll play for Australia, but if I'm playing for Australia, that gets me on the international stage and I can almost get another club that's better if I perform well?
Well, yeah, I guess the answer to that is that the first and foremost answer is you've got to play. So if you're playing regularly at your club level, it gives you an opportunity to get into the national team. If you're playing regularly at club level and national team, well, you're in, sitting in, that's the target. And, you know, obviously, and if you're playing well with the Socceroos and not playing in your club level, then, you know, it still gives you exposure, but you've got to make the right moves. So the most important thing is making the right decision where you go to a club that you're going to play. Mm. And probably I know that better than anything. But, you know, in saying that, though, sometimes, you know, you think you're making the right moves and they don't work out. Coaches move or get sacked or whatever, and then all of a sudden the framework changes, you know. But the most important thing is for me that you've got to play, and sometimes not necessarily playing in the best league, but you're playing regularly in a good league. You know what I mean? When I say best league, instead of going to the English Premier League, you're playing in, you know, the Dutch or the Belgium leagues or something like that. Still gives you good football and you're still getting match time and you're playing regularly. You know?
I know Jason, your son, has had his ups and downs with clubs over the his whole journey. Mm. When you go, so you've had a lot of experience in this area. When you go and make a decision about a club, you might have three or four offers that your agent's been able to put in front of you. How do you make a decision? Is it purely the financial aspect? Is it whether you get game time? What questions do you ask of the coach? Do you meet the coach beforehand and talk to the coach? What do you do to try and make a good decision? Because I know these things can go haywire because you sign for a coach who loves you and suddenly gets sacked 2 weeks later, which happened to Marcos Rojas. It's happened to a million players over the years.
Well, that's, you know, Jason's had the same thing. You know, just finished the World Cup in Brazil. You know, I was probably against going to England. I didn't think that was the right league for him. But unfortunately, you know, playing in the English Premier League, they splash really stupid money around, you know, and I couldn't get involved in saying yes or no because it was his money. But at the same time, he had offers after the World Cup, and you talk about exposure. You know, after the World Cup, he had offers from Italy, you know, Germany, Spain, but England, no one can match English pound in terms of playing in the Premier League. So Jason made the decision to go there, and, you know, and then all of a sudden the coach got the sack.
Who was the coach there at the time you signed him?
God, I forgot his name. From Everton, he was, what was his name?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, no, it'll come to mind, but I know who you're talking about. He wasn't a huge name, but he's actually respected.
So, then he got the sack. Then
within what period of time?
Probably about five-month period. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's all about results, you know what I mean? We were talking about results before with Ange. It's all about results in this game, anywhere in the world. You don't get results, you get the sack. Mm. So, and, you know, if the results aren't going well, that's the writing on the wall. They're the red flags, you know what I mean? So, but they were up and down at Brom, and then they brought in the new coach, and that's... You know, Poulos came in, and he actually told Jason straight from the start. Poulos was great for Jason. Yeah. You know, he was a great mentor and that. But he just said, "Listen, you're not going to play. My back line is you've got to be 6'4". And everyone has got to be 6'4", and we're going to park the bus." And that was pretty much what he said first day.
Yeah.
So then it was about moving forward.
And, of course, he came in because they were obviously looking down the barrel of relegation.
Correct.
And suddenly the club, I think the story is the club came in and said, "Oh, look, you got yourself £1 million bonus if you keep them up."
That's what they do. Yeah. But Poulos is renowned for saving clubs, and his strategies are saving clubs. And he generally coaches all the teams or manages all the teams that are at relegation level. And his bonus is he gets £1 million to save him from relegation. So that's his target. So he just parks the bus, buys and uses what he's got and gets certain players to serve what his purpose is. And he's made a long-standing living from it because he's good at what he does, saving teams from relegation.
So going back to the point about all players looking at where they are right now, and given that, depending on what where they are in the world, because I think the Chinese league obviously is a different league, finishes at a different time. So I think that finishes around January, doesn't it? The Chinese league, or pretty soon. So so someone like a Trent Sainsbury could maybe look at the second half of the European season somewhere, because there is talk about the fact that even though he didn't play a lot at Inter Milan when he was there, he did play one or two games, and that was enough to attract interest from a club in Italy. And he might be City or B, it doesn't really matter.
But also, too, you know, for me, it's about playing regularly, you know what I mean? Getting loaned out if he's at Chinese club or he's at Inter and getting loaned out. He's played in Holland, you know, I don't know how many games he's played there, but he's played in Holland and there's other leagues to play in as well that are still good leagues, you know what I mean? You're playing in good leagues and the standard's good. And this is all about developing as a player as well. The most important thing is to play. And obviously the real key to it is everyone wants to play in the best league, but they're stepping stones. You've got to do the hard yards and get experience in maybe the lower league or the middle league, and then you go to the top league and then the Super League at the end of the day.
How about doing an Aaron Moy? And a guy, hugely talented guy. He was, I think, a Bolton Wanderers as an apprentice. He was knocking on the door of senior football. 3 or 4 years knocking on the door. Obviously went to St Mirren in Scotland, lost his way a little bit there. Came back to Australia and went to Western Sydney Wanderers and in and out of the team under Popovich, but then came to Melbourne Heart/City and just exploded. Is that a viable option, or is that something that players overseas might look at if they've had this run of bad luck when it comes to clubs?
Well, now the A-League's established, I think the A-League's a reasonable league to come back to if you think, you know. And there's some players, you know, in the national team that are playing in the A-League, you know what I mean? So I think, you know, for Aaron Moy has been really... Sometimes it's the experience. You have to experience the experience of being let down before you can have that hunger and drive to get back up. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes things come easy as well, and you don't appreciate maybe the experiences. So you're with Aaron Moy. Obviously, things didn't work out when he was in Europe. He's come back. He's worked hard. He stayed focused, and he's been hungry, and he's done really well at club level here. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's gone to City, who've sold him to Huddersfield. So and Huddersfield's been promoted, and you know, and things are looking great. You know what I mean? But also coaches too. You know, I think the player has a responsibility of product. That's the key. If you analyze yourself as a player, whichever player it is, you've got to ask yourself, what's my product, and what do I give this team, and how often do I do it, and how consistent am I, and how long. Am I here for? Do you know what I mean? To the next target. Do you know what I mean? So it's all about performance and playing regularly. And Aaron Moy's obviously doing that, and he's playing well, and he's in the Premier League, and he's playing well for the national team, and thank God we've got him playing. So he's a great example of someone who's come back to Australia. I don't think there's a winning way of answering that question. I think everyone's different. People go through Europe, people come back and play here, and then they've gone back to Europe. Moy is one great example that has done that. And, you know, I think it's just the most important thing is how do you achieve playing regularly and picking the right clubs too. Sometimes a lot of people want to play for the best clubs and then, you know, there's a lot more pressure on those clubs to get results. And sometimes you pick middle of the table teams, maybe not as much money, but you're playing regularly, which will then, while you're in the shop window, but bring in more money if you've got the product and you're performing.
Really, really quickly, Dave-O, do you talk to the coach of the club that is interested in you about and ask them the hard questions about, are you going to play me? How do you see my role in this team? How important am I to this team? Do you actually do that, or do you not touch that area and just go and prove yourself?
I've never experienced that in my career, and you know, I don't know anyone who's gone up to the coach and said, "Listen, you know, am I going to play? And how, you know, what's my plans? What do you think of me?" and all that sort of stuff. You know, you go to a club, the club wants you. Obviously, for the club to want you, the coach must want you.
Yeah.
So the coach wants you, and then once you go there, you've got to do the business. And sometimes, you know, like I said, there's a lot of variables, you know what I mean? I just think it all comes back to the player, though, at the end of the day. If the player he's got to know that he's got to perform, he's there to do a job, and it's all about product, what his role is. I think the most important thing for the player is to understand what the coach wants, and then you've got to do it. If you can't do it, well, then in this game, you're on your way, or the coach is on his way, and then the new coach comes in, and you start from scratch again.
Dave-O, it's been great talking to you again this Thursday. Of course, it's a wonderful day because last night, the Socceroos qualify for another World Cup. We've got another World Cup to go through and where we get anxious and nervous again. But let's hope. I want to see Ange in the job. But whatever happens, I'm supposing if he walks away, it's obviously for his own benefit, and we can look forward with another coach. But thanks for joining us today, and we'll chat to you again next Thursday.
No worries, Carlos.
Good on, mate. That's Alan Davidson, legend of Australian football here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Football Extra, that brings Football Extra to an end for today. You can podcast the show on iTunes and SoundCloud.com. So until next time, may you have a great day in football.
Football Extra with Carlos Alberto Diego and Luis Taffer on FNR, Football Nation Radio.